This is the All Revved Up Podcast, and I'm Reverend Emmett Price.
And I'm Reverend Irene Monroe.
Now, Irene, I know you want to give the folks a tsunami, so come on and hit us with that tsunami.
Okay, I want to give you a tsunami of thanks for your support and sharing the podcast with us and these wonderful reviews. And what I want you to know is that we welcome your critiques too, that this is a space that we want to share with you as well. And so as ministers, we are concerned about what you're concerned about. So send you your concerns, your interests, people you think should be on the show, and give us a shout out.
Now, I agree with Reverend Irene Monroe about sharing this space with you, but send your concerns to her. allrevveduppod@gmail.com. Sign them to Irene Monroe with your critiques. I'm just playing. We absolutely love you all. We love our producers. And this is a great opportunity for us to share in this conversation. So Irene, you mentioned the term twindemic. What is a twindemic, or in this season, what are you defining as twindemic?
In this season right now, I'm defining it as COVID-19 and racism. And when we hit the flu season, it will be for us as African Americans, a tridemic.
Now, you know, you mentioned the flu season. There's an old saying that when non-black folks catch the flu, then black folks get pneumonia.
Absolutely.
And we've seen that with this twindemic, you know, that the SARS virus, the COVID-19, does not discriminate. It's a global pandemic. It's all across the world. But the healthcare in this country, there's a disparity in terms of who gets treated better than others. And in the death toll, we see people of color's numbers rising. So you have done over 70 Zoom funerals to date. What is that like?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, you know, it's pretty pathetic. It's pretty pathetic, and it's very, very sad. And one of the things is that people don't understand when they say, well, X number of people have died. With each body comes a face, a family, and a community. And so what is happening, because we are hit so disproportionately, that this twindemic has upended the way, the rituals, and the way in which we, you and I, Emmett, do pastoral care to a grieving and bereaved community.
So we're not able to gather in the ways that we used to. You know, someone dies and their home or the family home becomes a gathering space even before you get to a wake. Then you move from there to the wake, which precedes the homegoing celebration.
That's right.
So on the black side of town, we don't necessarily have funerals. We're sending that body, that vessel, back to their creator. In the Christian faith, we use, you know, back to God, right? So God blessed us with that individual, and now we're celebrating their life, right? From their birth date to their death date. And now we send them back to God, and we celebrate all of their contributions, all of the fact that they mean so much to us, which is why it hurts so much.
Right, right. And, you know, and as pastoral care, you know, our goal is really to help people through a valley, really, of anxiety, fear, and grief. But another part of our role in this moment is funeralizing our community. And we have to do it with a certain kind of dignity. We do it with a certain kind of aesthetic. There are different types of black funerals that we have. But, you know, the interesting thing that I've been dealing with, you know, in doing these funerals here is that, you know, there's a serious immediate disconnect once you get off of Zoom. And so what I'm trying to do and have been trying to do is to give as much dignity, to shape it around the specifics of the person.
You know, you mentioned the Zoom piece, and this is really interesting because for black folks, funerals tend to be family reunions. As a matter of fact, and, you know, maybe I can be a little, use a little levity here. Sometimes funerals end up being places where you meet family that you didn't know existed, right?
So the only time you see family.
It's the only time you see family, but sometimes you read that obituary and there's an extra son, or there's a former wife, or there's an extra somebody who you didn't know existed. And so now we're looking around.
Or mistress.
or a plus one, right? And so, you know, it's interesting that through Zoom, that level of proximity and intimacy to actually patch up previous rifts or to get closer to cousins or whatnot, it's a lot difficult to do during a Zoom, you know, funeral experience.
Yeah, one of the things that I certainly have had to deal with is that, you know, I mean, it dwarfs, let me tell you the good things it does. It dwarfs distances, you know, and when you think about, you know, you got a cousin down in North Carolina, you up here in Boston, and you got someone in Chicago, it really dwarfs distances. It also allowed people who would not come to the funeral come and pay their respects. But I tell you what is very, very hard doing Zoom funerals. There are two things that's hard. Once you disconnect, you're disconnected. So you don't have the repast. That's number one. The other thing about a Zoom funeral that is very, very hard is you can't do pastoral care, because a lot of times folks have said to me that, you know, I hope I'm not next. And so as a pastor, you know, I would be coming to your house, sitting with you, you know, grieving with you. And you certainly can't do that.
So Irene, are you finding professional mourners who are showing up to these Zoom rooms? Because, you know, before COVID, you had folks who showed up to funerals and they didn't even know the deceased. I mean, they just, you know, pop up and they're the ones who are wailing and crying. You know, they're the ones who are falling over caskets and into caskets. I mean, do they have places in Zoom where these folks can gather?
Well, let me say a few things about that. One of the things clearly is that to do a Zoom, you have to get a link. That's number one. Number two here, I just have to say here, we joke about long funerals. Well, these funerals are not long. I mean, I as I was sharing with someone, I had watched a Madea family funeral just this weekend, and we will all remember the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, which was, I think, 3 days with a change of outfits. So no, these are really tight and disconnected and disembodied kind of funerals. And I need to say this, is that it doesn't allow us to address the grief. Yeah. And that's the thing that we have to talk about, grief on top of grief. And when I say on top of grief, I'm talking about the pandemic of racism and now the COVID taking the lives of us disproportionately. So that's the thing that bothers me here. I'm not able to do the grief work. And what bothers me is that you not only are we now dealing with generational grief, but we're dealing with household grief, people worrying, Will they be next? And that's one of the complaints and laments that I have received from folks when I have done these funerals.
You know, what's interesting, you talk about grief, and grief comes in many forms and shapes and sizes. Our young people are grieving the fact that they are going to school digitally, not all of them, but many of them. Some of our young people are grieving the fact that their sports seasons have been either truncated or been disrupted. A number of folks are grieving the fact that they can't work the way that they used to, that they aren't able to, you know, be as effective. Some of our parents are grieving the fact that their kids are home. That's while they're right. trying to work. And so there are all kinds of dreams and goals and objectives that have been kind of disrupted in this season. There's a grief around that, in addition to the death. And the death toll is huge.
Right.
And so
in addition also to the stigma.
Yeah.
So this is the problem that is happening. And it reminds me of AIDS, because of the negative association of having this virus. Mm-hmm. So you don't tell your neighbors. Mm-hmm. You go on the down low with this here. You're afraid to go into the hospital, particularly if it's one of those hospitals that it's a community hospital and everybody knows you. Mm-hmm. And so what we have here is that here are people who disproportionately don't get health care. Some will think that they can sort of weather it out. And by the time many of them actually go to the doctor, it's much too late, because this is a virus not to play with. And so what I'm trying to do when someone says to me, you know, Rev, I worry if I'm next, and I say, go get tested. They're worried about getting tested. Because in one sense, if they know the result, they have to do something, particularly if it's positive. And if they don't know the results, they sit in anxiety.
Well, that anxiety is huge. The depression is huge. And the reality is that there are less and less and less resources and assistance for folks who are struggling with anxiety, particularly if they were not diagnosed with anxiety before COVID-19,
That's right.
and don't necessarily know the signs and don't know how to wrestle with that. And then, of course, depression. You talk about stigmas. There's all kinds of stigmas around depression. And folks, you know, who are not familiar with clinical diagnoses and, you know, some of the ways that we can treat it, and not necessarily all by medicine. There are other ways that we can treat, you know, depression, and not necessarily you and I. We're not professional clinicians, but we certainly can refer to folks who are still
and
in that.
That's right. And so what happens is we talk about these five stages of grief, the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross stages of grief. But what happens with folks in COVID, they don't even have time to grieve.
Yeah.
Okay. And our community, because many of them are frontline workers, they don't have the luxury of working at home here and stuff. They don't have not only the time to take care of their health and as well as to grieve. Many of them in many ways are actually get into a state of denial about it.
You are listening to the All Revved Up podcast. We're talking about grief today. We'll be right back. Was the United House of Prayer Band playing It Will Never Lose Its Power. You're listening to the All Revved Up podcast. You know, Irene, one of the things that when you talk about Black grief, there's something about the communal essence of the New Orleans jazz funeral, particularly the old school version of it, where when a person died, the folks would, you know, prepare the body at the home, and then they would caravan through the streets. So as folks came out of their homes, they joined the second line because there was already a band there, and folks were back there with their umbrellas waving to celebrate the folks, and they would go to the highest plane where the cemetery was, and as they laid the person to rest, the music would play. And many people think that the music was the most important part of that, but it wasn't. It was building community as the entire neighborhood came together to pay respects for the deceased. We're not able to do that right now. We're not able to build community right now.
But you know what, though? Still, the particular aesthetics of Black funerals are still going on, because they still, to me, I see them sort of as a radical testament of Blackness. It's you know, it's very, very interesting how they started out, because during slavery, we couldn't funeralize our own. I mean, they were overseen by an overseer, a white gaze. And then, believe it or not, it really was really during the Civil War, because we had Black soldiers, and nobody would funeralize those bodies but the community. But you know what happened from that? It developed a particular skill, okay? The Black funeral parlors. So, I mean, and that had, you know, listen, liturgy has a certain style. I mean, it, you know, it's something that still in many ways is subversive, because during slavery, it was subversive. As a matter of fact, what they don't tell us in the books is that a lot of times those slave insurrections were doing a funeral.
That's right. So
that's right. There was this slave named Gabriel. They were funeralizing an enslaved child. Okay, mm-hmm. The whole community came, but it turned into being an insurrection, as well as it's an opportunity to for many to run away towards freedom. So that's why you got the white overseas. So it has a unique style. I mean, listen, it has a certain liturgy. Listen, when I say aesthetic, okay, listen, it is like going to church, a certain dress, a certain type of music, what you say, the professional mourner who fall, or wait a minute, everybody's got that family member, okay, that falls into the casket, or wait, or better yet, hits the body and say, wake up. Yeah. So we have a particular style of how we do it, but the whole point is that it's collective grief. What we do is allow this kind of collective grief with this unique style of lamenting together, yet at the same time celebrating. And the reason why we do that, and that has a history, of course, it goes back to slavery, but it has a lot to do with how we live even today, that it doesn't matter how long you live, because we understand our lives are shortened, not only because of these social determinants like health disparity and environmental racism, but our children, we're getting shot down in the streets of America. So it allows us to come together, as you say, as a community, and celebrate that particular life that leaves us with a certain legacy, a certain light that they've been here. So,
well, you're talking about legacy. Let me tell you about legacy as a Black church musician.
All right.
And because the Black funeral becomes a training ground, because in that Black funeral, you got some singers who will modulate your key. And if you're a good musician, you can go with them.
All right.
And if you're not a good musician, you keep playing on Black funerals and you will become a good one. Right. And there's something about Black preaching at Black funerals. I mean, folks, that's where you learn how to preach, because if you don't preach well at a Black funeral, somebody's going to toss their shoe at you, because that's where folks come from out of the woodworks to hear what thus saith the Lord, and to hear what you are going to say about the deceased. So you're right about the liturgy and the particular nuances of the Black funeral. That's something particular.
It's the void of the white gaze. It was that moment that if that person walked through life feeling like nobody, you were somebody to us, and we come and thank you for however long you have been here. And it's very, very different. It doesn't matter who, you know, what you do. It doesn't matter about your vocation, who you know, your family legacy. It's that you were part of this community. And so I always remember this song by Shirley Caesar that I love, when she says, you know, and it's about the church coming together. And I love this song. It was in Fighting Temptation, when she says,
the church is in mourning.
The church is in mourning. And that is exactly right. It's the whole community in mourning, but yet also in celebration. So, you know, it's very, very interesting. New Orleans has a particular style, but, you know, but we still don't lose the central part of what Black funerals are about. Interestingly enough, you're from that area, your family is, and, you know, white New Orleans didn't appropriate that style.
Yes, there's a big difference between the ethnic experiences there in New Orleans, from folks who are indigenous, from folks who are Black, and folks who are not Black, you know. But one of the things that I want to really press in before we depart here is that in this season, there are folks to talk to, and please make sure that you press in on working through your own grief. Because in this season, we are triggered. And in many ways, we begin to think about those who have gone on long ago.
That's right.
And the memories of them come back. And we have to learn how to process that. We have to learn how to get out of our own heads. And so the fears that you mentioned, the anxieties that you mentioned, the depression that we had talked about, we have to really learn how to work through them and work beyond the stigmas.
Yeah.
And so there are faith leaders, there are non-faith leaders, there are professional folks who we can process things with, who we can talk with, you know, depending on your comfort. But I encourage our listeners today, if you are struggling with grief, or you don't even know that you're struggling with it, but you have thoughts and thinking
That's right.
about, you know, some of these things, I encourage you, we encourage you to seek some support.
Right. And, you know, we know that this is a difficult topic. One of the things is that we don't like to talk about this subject. And I've always asked, you know, a number of folks, well, you know, ministers like you, Emmett, why don't we talk about death and dying? But I think part of it is because our life is always navigating death and dying due to racism. I mean, it's sort of like having that talk with our child. You know, back in the day, we had to try to run away from lynching. And even today, we still don't have a lynching bill, although we have a lynching museum. So we're always navigating life and death. And that's that persistent sort of pandemic that I'm hoping in this inflection point, due to George Floyd's death, we can begin to address those issues and begin to live a full life. The life, as they say in the Constitution, of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness here.
Well, I'm hoping that we'll get to the place where we can stop viewing spontaneous capital punishment on our phones and through social media. I'm praying that we get to that place where we can see these senseless murders no more. Irene, you have a final word for us. Let us hear it.
So this is my homegoing benediction. Birth is a beginning. Death is a destination, and life is a journey. We mourn and celebrate as an act of prayer and praise for one's life. While they may be gone from our sight, they are never gone from our hearts. And those we love never truly leave us, because there's something that even death cannot touch, and that's our memories with them. We give praise for our loved ones who have gone home, for the gift of their life with us, for the strength on which we have leaned on them, for the lessons we have learned from them, and the beauty of their presence, for the power of their love, for the light that will never leave us. Their love will continue to enfold us, the power of their wisdom will continue to guide us, and the presence of their legacy will continue to be with each of us. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
And Ashe.
Ashe. All Revved Up is brought to you by us, the Revs. Our amazing producers are Kyla Wright and Cavante Smalls.
Music for this episode is brought to you by Reverend Price's son, musical prodigy, Emmett G. Price IV. All Revved Up is distributed by GBH.
Additional thanks to Bob Kempf, Nina Perzuki, Chelsea Mers, Meredith Neerman, and Zach Waldman.
If you like what you hear, let us know. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us at All Revved Up Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
Feel free to send us a note, a question, or a comment to allrevveduppod@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of All Revved Up.